Welcome to Speaking Out for the Blind here on ACB Radio, where your listening is our business. I'm Brian McCallan. What if everybody out there could see a smartphone or their tablet without the use of their glasses? Professors and former students have teamed up to improve vision-correcting displays. Using an iPod prototype, the team members have devised algorithms to adjust the displays for people with visual impairments. Visually impaired users can see the screens in sharp focus, and the technology may also be life-changing for those whose vision can't be corrected with glasses. Joining us to talk about the new technology is one of its key developers. That developer is Dr. Brian A. Barsky. He's a professor of computer science and an affiliate professor of optometry and vision science at UC Berkeley. He joins me by Skype. Dr. Barsky, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Brian. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
What inspired you and the rest of the team to embark on this vision-correcting display project? Give us a little bit of background.
Well, the history is actually, it grew out of another project that we were doing a few years ago. That project was an attempt to simulate the vision of a particular patient after we had acquired measurements and data pertaining to optical problems with his or her vision. To put it in the simplest terms, if somebody were just nearsighted or something like that, and we had an eyeglass prescription, we could simulate how that person would see without the aid of glasses. But what was even more interesting was to look at more complicated optical problems that happen in vision. And I don't know, maybe this is a moment to actually step back and just put a little background on all of this, especially for the context for visually impaired. Probably many of your listeners are aware that there are many different aspects to different kinds of impairments. What we're looking at, I'm using the word optical, we're looking at problems that arise from the cornea and the lens, the so-called anterior segment is the fancy ocular term, but the front part of the eye, which is the part of the eye whose job it is to bend light. What we're not looking at are what happens beyond that, which is to say when the light lands on the retina and if there are problems associated, such as macular degeneration, those types of things. That's a different issue. So we're looking at problems in the optics of the eye. And with that background, I'll just pop back maybe and say that, again, the earlier project was looking at measuring the optical problems. And what's interesting is sometimes they can be more complex than simple nearsighted or farsighted. And again, maybe not to get too technical, but in optics, there's a word we use called aberrations, which refers to the errors or the artifacts that are generated by any optical system. This is true for lenses in a camera or a telescope, and it's true for the cornea and the lens in the eye, any kinds of errors. And what's really interesting is to look at some of the more complex aberrations and what they will create for people. So that was what that project was. And then, if you want me to go on about that, what happened after that was, after we were able to make these simulations, the question arose, wow, you know, we're making a display image now that simulates how a particular patient sees. Would it be possible with that information, to instead of just simulate how that person sees and show it to somebody else, would it be possible to alter that display tailored for that viewer, knowing who that person is with his or her optical problems that we've now measured very precisely? Could we alter that display such that when that person saw it, it would appear in sharp focus?
So it's sort of what the person perceives that he or she sees, right?
Well, I may have confused you a little, because I talked about two different things. So the old project, which was the precursor, the motivating factor for doing what you're asking me about today, was simulating what a person would see. So we could measure the optical aspects of somebody's eyes who has some optical problems, the mundane or complicated, but optical problems. And then we could create an image that would demonstrate to somebody else what that problem is. I mean, to take a simple example, just to make that very clear, it's not impossible for somebody to have double vision in one eye. That can occur. It's not that frequent, but it can occur. It's known as monocular diplopia, one eye double vision. Imagine that somebody has that, and we measure that person's eye, and we capture the distortions and by measuring what we have in the eye, and then we create an image based on that information that actually demonstrate how that looks. That was the first project. And somebody else could look at it and say, "Oh my goodness, now I see that, you know, this other person sees in this way." That was the first project. The second project, which is the one that you're asking me about, was motivated by that, but it's a completely different approach. All that it has in common is the idea of measuring very precisely the optics of somebody's eye. But given that, we are trying to create a display now that is intended for use just by the person with the problem. And the intention is, the idea is that we will undo, in some sense, what the optics of that person's eye are about to do. What the errors that will be introduced, we know what they're going to be because we've measured that person's eye very precisely. And we're going to try to do the inverse before, if you wish, the opposite before, so that the net result of the two will become clear. A very simple way to explain it, maybe that's a little oversimplified, but it makes it. Imagine that somebody is sitting down in front of a computer monitor and is wearing sunglasses, and says to somebody else, "Gee, this appears very dim to me." Well, of course, it's appearing dim to that viewer because the viewer is wearing sunglasses. Even mm-hmm. It's perfect. So, but let's say we would like to compensate for that. Let's say we'd like to change the monitor so that person could continue wearing those sunglasses but see the monitor in proper brightness. The way to do that would be to increase the brightness of the monitor much more than normal. Anybody else walking in would say, "Wow, oh, that monitor is too bright." But that person for whom we have increased the brightness will say, "No, I think it looks just great. Thank you very much." So that's the concept. We do something sort of distorted and strange in the display with malice aforethought, if you will, with the idea of knowing we know what's going to happen in that person's vision. And we're doing the opposite in the display so that the net result of the distorted display that we're creating in concert with the person's optical problems, after the two happen together, the result is going to be something that can be seen in clearer focus. That's the notion. That's the concept.
What computer algorithms did you and the team develop for the display to compensate for people's visual impairments?
So the algorithm is a little bit complicated. We're talking about some mathematics that has some complexity. It involves something that's known as a deconvolution and some fancy words that may sound scary, but I mean, basically, the overall concept is we are adjusting the light that's coming out of every pixel in a very controlled, careful fashion. And we're doing this together with putting a very thin pin screen with very fine pin screen holes are very close together over the display. And so what we're effectively doing is we are taking several of the pixels that would be on the display and having them correspond to a single hole that the light will come through. And then we are controlling the amount of light in these pixels so that we're effectively changing the way the display will be and knowing where this light will go because of the direction that's corresponding to how the hole is set up, we know it's going to land in slightly different places in the eye and get focused in different ways. And by very carefully calculating all of this, we alter the brightness of the display on a pixel by pixel basis such that the result is going to be what we're looking for. It's relatively complicated calculation. But the key thing is it's being done with the specific knowledge of the final viewer. That's the input into this thing, and that's those are the parameters. You know, and if you gave the same physical device to another person with different problems, we would simply change the values of these parameters, and then the calculations would come up with a different result, and the same physical hardware would now be useful for somebody else. That's one of the key points to mention here. This device is changeable from one person to another simply by changing the information we have about the particular viewer's vision system, and those are just parameters that go into the software, but the physical hardware is not altered. It would be the same from one person to another.
Interesting. So how might people like me, who are very nearsighted, enjoy using this new display?
So let's see. If somebody is very nearsighted, then often what that means is they have some trouble seeing in the distance, and so they have to be holding things extremely close to their eyes. And of course, I'd be careful because there are many, many causes and certain things will be different. But in general, if you have simple nearsightedness, effectively what we would be doing is altering the display so it could be held at a more comfortable distance and still be seen.
What are some of the continued eye tracking technology improvements that you're looking into, which might make it easier for the new displays to adapt to the users' head positions?
Okay, well, it's interesting you raised that. That's another aspect. So, indeed, we do our calculations with an assumption of viewer position. And being able to know the viewer position accurately can help with the quality of the results. So we are interested in the future to be able to use information about eye trackers that could be incorporated with the device. Last year, 2014, there was an introduction by Amazon of a phone that's called the Fire Phone. And one of the features of that phone is an onboard eye tracker. So that's exciting for us because it shows that it's probably the case that in the very near future, the ability to do eye tracking could be right on the phone. And if that's the case, we would make very good use of that because then we would have accurate information about the viewer position and orientation, and we would incorporate that information as part of the parameters that we're using in our algorithm to do our calculations.
Yeah, I understand that you and your team presented some exciting research on the new displays at the recent SIGGRAPH Computer Graphics Conference last August in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Tell us more about this important conference and how that special presentation went.
Oh, well, it's fun to have you ask me about SIGGRAPH. It's near and dear to my heart because that's a conference that I've been very involved with my whole career, even back to my graduate student days. And it's not much older than my own career, which spans a number of decades now. So I've seen it grow from what was a very small conference years ago to one that's huge now. It's a very exciting conference. It's a conference in computer graphics oriented around work that generally has to do with images and often the creation of images in the computer. And so, of course, if you think about things like computer animation, video games, special effects in films, as well as many more sobering things like medical technology, where we also make use of technology. All this kind of research is presented at this conference. It's an annual conference. It happens every summer, and it is, I think, indisputably the most important conference in the world in this field. There's really nothing like it. It's an amazing conference, very large in every way. Many people attend. There's a demonstration of equipment. There's from computer companies and other companies associated with making images, and then there's a very large academic or scientific track, which is what we're principally involved with, where people present their work. And it's from our standpoint also, it's incredibly competitive. There are many submissions to present there for everyone that's actually accepted, very, very difficult to have your work accepted. So the work is of very high quality, and we're all very excited when we get something accepted there. So we were very happy to be able to present it at that conference.
take a little bit of time here and explain to us, what does the future hold for this project? I mean, what are your predictions? Do you predict this new, these new vision correcting displays are going to really take off? Or is it going to take a lot of, is that going to take a lot of time for this outcome to materialize? I mean, what's the future of the displays?
Well, I mean, we're very hopeful that this could lead to very helpful and interesting devices in the future. I also want to be very cautious because I don't want to make great claims. We just do our work and hope that it can go well and help people. I'll tell you one thing that we haven't touched on that is particularly of interest for visual impairments, and for me, to be frank, is probably the most exciting aspect. We mentioned much earlier in our discussion today that there are these aberrations that we talked about, these different artifacts or errors in the optics of any lens system, and including the human eye. But what I didn't really clarify was that we can divide these into two categories. There are some relatively simple aberrations, and there are some more complicated ones. And the simple ones are correctable by eyeglasses, and the complicated ones are not. And this is very interesting in many ways. It's interesting just intellectually to think about how this works in physics, if people care about physics, but it's very interesting in terms of really helping people. Because what this means is, luckily for most people, their optical aberrations fall into this simple category, but they're called low-order aberrations, to give you the actual term. And lucky for them, because eyeglasses, what a wonderful technology. They're not invasive. Your eyes change. They can be changed. There's no surgery involved. It's a great technology, and it helps the vast majority of people. That's the good news. The bad news on the other side of the coin is that when people's optical systems have these more complicated aberrations, which are known as higher order aberrations, then eyeglasses are very limited in their ability to help them. Really cannot help very much at all. And for them, it's very difficult. And one of the things that I'm very excited about for this project, so this is sort of the future, is I think that we can do our so-called vision correcting display, as we like to call it, not only for these lower order aberrations, but also for the higher order aberrations. So what this means is, you know, a lot of people are very excited about the fact that, well, you can see your smartphone without your eyeglasses. Well, indeed, that's true. That's part of the appeal for what we're doing. But what's really interesting to me is, what about somebody who cannot see the smartphone even with eyeglasses because of these higher order aberrations? If we can create a vision correcting display that can address higher order aberrations, then people who right now cannot see a smartphone given eyeglasses or not may in the future be able to see their smartphones again with no visual correction at all. And we think that is quite possible. We've done the initial work. It seems promising, and I think that's within reach.
How can our listeners contact you if they have any questions about the display project?
They can contact me. Just type in my name in Berkeley, and you'll find me and find my email address. As simple as that. I do want to reiterate that we've had a lot of media attention. You and I were chatting a bit about that, and that sometimes tends to exaggerate things, which is disturbing to me as a careful, methodical scientist. And so I want to reiterate, this is a research project. We have an interesting idea that we're very excited about. We're doing the best we can to move forward with that in a scientific way. There's no product. There's nothing available. It's just that's still, I'm sure, years away to happen. There's no company. There's not even user trials. We're not even working with visually impaired people to test things. We are far, far, far away from having anything that's going to be helping people in the near term. That's not what we do. We're basic scientists. We're not even, you know, medical people. We're basic scientists doing things that are oriented around physics and mathematics and computer algorithms. So I'm very happy to hear of people that may be helped, but I don't want to have anybody's expectations be dashed. Unfortunately, there's nothing available now, and nor for the foreseeable future on this. We're just hoping in the longer term that this will turn into something that will be helpful to people.
Anything else that you'd like to add?
No, I think we've done a good job of covering things. I hope it's clear. I hope it's not too much gobbledygook. I try to avoid that. No, I really appreciate you contacting me about this, and I hope very much that these ideas will help people in the future. I guess for me the key thing is what I was saying just towards the end a few moments ago, that while I've had so much media attention focused on eyeglasses free, as they like to put it, display, what's close to my heart, what I'm passionate about, is the ability that we think we will be able to provide a display that people could see for whom their optical problems are not correctable by eyeglasses. And that's what's exciting for me, the most exciting part for the future. It's a much smaller population, but a much more important one in terms of people that we may be able to help compared to what's available to them currently.
Dr. Barsky, this might be one new piece of technology that might help our visually impaired listeners see their mobile devices more clearly. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Before we go, I welcome comments and suggestions on today's episode and past and future shows. Just visit and like me on Facebook at Speaking Out for the Blind, or follow me on Twitter at Speak Out Blind. That's all for this edition of Speaking Out for the Blind. Thanks for listening, and remember to speak out.
Here on ACB Radio Mainstream, some of our programming is provided by the International Association of Audio Information Services. To learn more about IAAIS, visit their website at www.iaais.org.
The First Amendment reads, "The people shall not be deprived or abridged of their right to speak."
The odds are, the person you just heard is an African American.
Because African Americans are twice as likely to suffer a stroke as white Americans.
That's twice as likely a stroke could rob you of the freedom to speak your mind.
The freedom to shout from mountaintops.
The freedom to tell your mother you love her.
And it's twice as likely a stroke could take your life.
Therefore, it's twice as crucial for us to do something about preventing a stroke.
Learn how you can help beat the odds.
Start by calling 1-888-4-STROKE or go online to strokeassociation.org.
Join the power to end stroke.
A public service message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.